Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
What's going on, all you Brooklyn Buddhists? This is Woody Massey, producer of the Jimmy Della Valle Brooklyn Buddha podcast, co-hosted by Tim Homamune. Today on the podcast, we had Jimmy's friends, Mark and Anna, Jimmy and his wife. They've gone out and spent some time. Mark and Anna, cool people, both are writers, very experienced, have a lot of different treatments, and they actually sat this one out. I was doing some technical work, and Jim and Tim sat down, had a great little back and forth with Mark and Anna. So enjoy. Hope you miss me. And for all Jimmy's future dates 2015, check out JimmyDellaValle.com. All right, everybody, you have a great day and drive safe. Forget about it.
Brooklyn Buddha. So, I don't know if I've ever had, normally I bring in actors, comedians, directors, never just straight up behind the scenes people. This is the first time I'm bringing in the behind the scenes people.
That's a good yeah. Change.
It's a good thing. You know, I want my guests to listen to everybody in the industry and learn things. But these guys, so here's the thing, Tim. You don't know anything about this. So me and you do the show in Rome, New York.
Yep.
We kill it out there. The guy Bill DiPaolo, who owns the place, hits me up and says, hey, my writer friends are coming out to L.A. and taking some meetings. So they come out here, and we meet Sunday. We hang out for like 4 hours, and then... we went and ate, and then we're talking about some projects, and they sent me some scripts and stuff, and then they take a meeting yesterday, and then they had, like, amazing feedback, and some really good things are going to happen with their, cool. their meeting, with a whole bunch of their writing projects. And, you know, it's good to see that they're actually structured writers. You know, like, a lot of people come, I am a writer.
But a lot of people are I do 8 different things.
Exactly.
Writer is one of them.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not like they're just, you know, but they're going to probably move out here, and they're extremely talented. You know, without further ado, I mean, behind the scenes as well as writer showrunners for TV and film, my new friends and going to be friends for a while, Mark and Anna Casada, I don't know. How do you say it pronounced?
Well, the actual Italian pronunciation is Casade. So, my grandfather came over on the boat from Sicily and said, hey, you know, I got to kind of blend in a little bit, so we're going to change pronunciation to Casade. So that's what they did. And, you know, for every family member we don't like, we just tell them that's a Casade or Casade. So.
Yeah. And then Anna, your lovely wife, how did she come into the picture?
She came into the picture. I was was actually 21, a military veteran of the United States Air Force.
So, oh, congratulations. Thank you for serving.
Appreciate that. So I was stationed over in Alaska, out in the middle of the boondocks in nowhere, where not even the bears would come and visit you because it's too damn remote.
Wow.
And too freaking cold at minus 64 degrees. However, she had to
be warm.
No, it wasn't like that.
She didn't keep me warm yet. I was thinking about it, and there were a few times I wish she would, but we met in Alaska, actually.
And we became writing partners up there. So we started working on scripts and stuff like that. Yeah, we got together every week, and we'd sit at the bar and write out pages. And
so you wrote by hand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No computer.
Well, I had a computer, but, you know, it's easier to brainstorm and things like that. My things flow better, so.
Right. Just taking the ideas and you're jotting them down, you do a quick outline, kind of the story idea on what you want to go with.
Had you ever written before?
I wasn't actually, the writing was not on the radar at the time, so I didn't do a lot of writing before whatsoever. I grew up as a musician in the industry, so. Mm-hmm. I was able to perform live with a few famous artists anyway. And once I kind of, really the passion was film and TV. I've always loved doing that. And I got into a lot of motion graphics work for doing all the 3D titling for films and stuff like that. And I started getting to the artistic side of that. But I absolutely loved doing film and TV. And then, I had an idea that I wanted to do a short film in Alaska and actually direct it and film it. And then I got introduced to Anna, and she was like, I'm a writer. And I'm like, well, that's an area that I'm not the expert at.
Right.
But she taught me a lot.
She taught you structure.
She taught me.
That's, that's what happened
with
me. I never went to school.
Yeah, she taught me the science of writing. And a lot of people don't realize that there is a...
It's like a Bunsen burner.
Yeah. There's a Bunsen burner. There's a few chemistry set. Got to smoke this a few times in order to get the thing unraveled. But she taught me a lot about the structure and the act breaks and how character development works.
Mm-hmm.
And it really opened my eyes as a beginning filmmaker to
mm-hmm.
really see that on that type of level, which made things a lot more clear for me, which I didn't realize. But she's super talented. I pimp her out any chance I can get as a writer. As a writer,
right.
I just want to say that, as a writer.
Right. So that's great. So, yeah, because I was telling my wife about it. I said, I would assume because she had taken the class through UCLA that she was the structure and you kind of like, had ideas, and then she taught you, because that's the same way I learned, I kind of forced him to learn how to do final draft,
Right.
And
then I taught another guy, and I taught another girl how to do final draft, not that I'm the king of it. Like, I've always gone against the grain. I've never, like, my old writing partner, well, he's still my writing partner, it's one deal, but he was so structured, he was so, like, okay, we're going to write all the notes by hand, then we're going to do notes on the thing, and this and that. I'm like, And when we first wrote Low Rollers together, we just fucking wrote. Like, I was like, all right, Tim, Jimmy, action goes into the fucking, goes into the basement, and like, that's how
right.
we wrote. Like, so
we're
then,
kind of like, what can we do next?
Yeah,
what's
next?
Structure.
Oh, yeah,
right.
I didn't go outside. we didn't know, and it's so funny. You guys are gonna laugh your ass off at this. You remember these days? It's like 1-2 in the morning. My girlfriend, I can't remember at the time. I don't know if it was my wife to be, but it's like, and me and him like to write late. So it's like 1-2 in the morning, and we write like something, and I go, "Happy winning, baby! We're fucking high five!" And it's just horrible. Like, we look back at it was horrible.
Right.
We're like, "We're gonna win an Emmy!" Like, it's like one sentence.
Yeah, congratulations! You got 2 sentences on a page. It took 4 hours.
We got the title.
and it was. What did you guys like? Was he a fast learner to learn the structure? Being a military, you're a smart man.
Yeah, he was a fast learner. It's funny. He's really good with ideas. Like,
mm-hmm.
and he comes up with some crazy, strange ideas that I go, where did you come up with that?
Right.
Absolutely crazy. And, and then I'll say, well, you can't do this in the story. And he's like, why? People can't be entertained. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It needs to come from character. You can't just have this random thing happening. And
mm-hmm.
so I was able to, help him realize that more and more. But I think that's our biggest argument.
Right.
Do you ever hold back where you go, I don't want to hurt his feelings?
Oh, no. She's like, hey, dumbass, when you're done over there crying in the corner, you want to come over and be a man and start writing again?
Yeah.
That's right. No, because it's like me and him, we fight, and it's so funny because so we wrote this sitcom, Not For Nothing, that's the name of it. So we write it, and it's good, it's not phenomenal because it's only, it's not even full length, So he's like, he was so difficult because he didn't know Jerry. Like, he didn't know Jerry like how he knows Jerry now, that's the other star and writer. So we're sitting down and we're trying to have a brainstorming session. And Tim is, I guess the word meticulous, he's so meticulous, he will never agree to anything. And I go, me and Jerry are like, oh yeah, so we can do this. And he's like, oh yeah, we're gonna start writing it down to. What if he did?
Right.
Like, oh, that's okay. And then we're like, oh, and then me and Jerry, oh, we got another idea. That's fucking amazing. And Tim's like, I don't know. Well, fuck you!
We'll get some, like you said, some rant. Right.
Well, you know, that, and
but
that,
you would pull us back. It was fun. But it was tough for, because Jerry's an older man. He's 60 years old. So for him to deal with Tim, who I've dealt with for, you know, almost 20 years, I know how to deal with Tim. So every once in a while, it's like, you know, I listen to him. He listens to me. And then I'll go, no, that's it. That's it. And I'll close the fucking computer on your hand. Like, bam. Like, that's it. We're done for today.
Well, it's not really arguing, though. It's creative development. That's what we tell everyone. They're like, are you, you know, my daughter's like, are you guys arguing again? No, no, we're creative development. But, you know.
Creative development, yeah. Black eye.
Black eye, yeah.
We have a creative development counselor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You stay in the corner of your rocks like this.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I'm a great storyteller, and she's the great technicality part of the writing. And when you put that kind of teamwork together,
that's what you need, because sometimes you'll get.
Tell stories too.
No, I'm not saying you can't.
Yeah, it's sort of like the, you know, sometimes even with Jimmy and myself, we'll. It will be too thinking of the idea, the theme line or something, and then we won't work on the actual dialogue or where the story goes. We're too focused on one that we're thinking on the same line, parallel, that you need that other side kind of angle.
Yeah, I never knew there was so much. I mean, I learned, like I said, I worked with Robert Vincent O'Neill for 2 years. I mean, I was his bitch and writing all these scripts and learning structure and this and that, because I had to get away from the other writing partner. So it was like, did you ever write with anyone else?
Yes. And it didn't. I no longer speak to that person.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It's funny how it turns out, you know, the person who won.
I only talked to Tim because he owes me money.
There you go.
Hers, I think, is buried in the Grand Canyon somewhere.
Yeah, well, I think he's still alive. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's funny how people can start out to be your best friend. I mean, I knew this guy, like, most of my life. And, you know, he won't talk to me. And it's over a script deal that he screwed up big time.
Right.
And, it was a mega payday coming everybody's way, and he screwed up a $60 million deal. And know.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and what? Who had you written with? Tommy T? He was you writing?
You really want me to stab you with this microphone? Yeah, no, let's not even do that. I've actually, Anna was the only person I've ever written with as far as working on a screenplay for a feature film or television. I've done a lot of creative work with a lot of different type of people, but in different rounds. But she is actually my first a script person. But, I mean, there is, I take that back. In the recent months, there is one. I got a friend that I actually work with on my normal daytime job, because imagine that, someone still has to pay a mortgage.
Right.
but my friend Thomas Galvin, he's an independent publisher and author. He does a lot of fantasy type series, kind of like the shows you'd see on CW, that type of stuff, like supernatural type of books that he writes that are on Amazon right now. And I wrote a TV pilot with him called The Janus Project. And that's picking up speed on certain levels right now. But yeah, he's my only other writing partner. But he wasn't, you know, I started writing with him and did the small project after I met Anna. And she basically taught me.
Do you guys find it better when you work solo, then come together, or just start together and work it that way?
We brainstorm everything. And we have a whiteboard in our living room, and we'll erase it and start over and go and brainstorm everything together until we're sure that we have a structure. And then I'll go and I'll put it on the cards and make sure everything's good to go. And that way I can visually see if there's any holes, because it may make sense on the board, but then you're looking at it going, ooh, we really need more in Act 2. We really need, you know, something else. Maybe we need a subplot, something like that. And then once we agree on that, then we'll outline together and review it. And then we split the writing. You know, he may work on a scene, I may work on a scene or whatever.
But on the same, like, same computer, like, because, like, I've had, like, on my Mac and then the other guy's Mac, and we could write together and it keeps changing.
Right.
Yeah, we have a drive.
We have a network. So at home we got a network drive. And we don't use Final Draft, we use Movie Magic.
Yeah.
And the Movie Magic files, what she'll do is if she's writing a scene or if I'm writing a scene, once I'm done with that scene, I'll put it on the network drive. She'll grab it off the drive and splice it into
her
Movie Magic. She always has the final draft, or should I say the full version of the script in front of her, and I'll take scenes and write them.
Right.
But, you know, it plays off of our strengths that way. You know, when we're dealing with a female and male actor, we have to do this cute meet for a romantic element. You know, she's a godsend with that stuff. She's really good at that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can do it, but I'm not as good as her. You know, if it calls for some comedic, weird, strange thing or an action sequence, Tom Cruise style, then, you know, that's my strength and that's where I'll
run.
And write that, and then, you know, it's great because then she'll check my dialogue and make sure that the dialogue flows with what she just wrote and the character is staying true.
Right.
So, because a lot of time when you have multiple writers and they're working on a storyline, she may say something character-wise and I may say something of the same character, but it doesn't really flow.
Right. The voices are different. You know, I'll have a character in my mind and, you know, this is the way they're going to speak. And then he writes lines and I'm like, oh, they would never say that. And then I go back and fix it. So that's why I love Movie Magic, and this is not a commercial. I am not a spokesperson, but they have a way that you can just print one character's dialogue. And so I'll go at the end, once we're done with the script, and we'll go and we'll do what we call a voice pass, and we'll print every character's dialogue, because we are going back and forth with the script so much.
Right.
And that way I can just see, oh, Bob said these things, and okay, would he say that? Would he say that? That one doesn't fit. Okay, and then you circle it and just move on to the next character. And then when we're all done, we'll go, okay, we have to fix these five lines for Bob, these five for Carol, and, you know, 10 for Ted.
Oh, so it only has their lines.
Yes.
Just those lines. Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
So
yeah.
In their class, is that what they taught you on?
No, that was something that I found out.
Did they have you, like, go on Celtics or no? You
no.
know Celtics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just...
You found it.
Yeah, it's through Movie Magic. It's just a way to print.
I remember that,
print
that's been around.
I remember.
Time.
Yeah,
it's been around.
I
never used it. Final Draft and Celtics.
Do you guys ever find that you bring in personal stuff that
all the
time you gotta like fine line?
It really is. I mean, that's your own voice coming into the character, your own experience. And if you can write your own experience, the voice comes out better. For that character. So if we were to write a character based on something that happened in our life, that character is going to come to life a lot more.
Yeah.
I think. And, you know, I think it's Anna's right. You know, we do that all the time as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not our personal, if we haven't experienced it personally, either her or I, we'll go to our friends and say, hey, so tell us about that. Or we'll listen to them and go, oh my God, that's amazing. And then we'll actually use their experience to help bring that character.
Do you ever feel like, or have you heard where you go, well, maybe I shouldn't, this is a little too personal, or maybe I shouldn't, have you ever second guessed it?
You know, there's some things get hard to write.
Mm.
We had a stalker.
Oh,
my God, and it got crazy. The local newspaper said they wanted to do an article on us. I don't even know how they found out that we had a development deal. Somebody told somebody in our small town, nothing ever happens. So they say, hey, we want to interview you. We want to put your picture in the paper. And we figured maybe like this quarter page thing, right? Two full pages, large pictures of us.
Wow.
Oh my God. So we wound up getting stalked by the local pharmacist. Swear to God, couldn't make this up. So we turned it into a screenplay. We wrote the treatment based on a true story. We embellished it, whatever, and turned it into a murder plot, you know, which obviously didn't happen. You know, we're both still alive. But,
so we got that
know,
going for us.
But it,
nice.
It got it was a pretty hairy situation. And so somebody was interested in it, and we actually pitched it. And they said, yes, they wanted to read the script. And it was too close to home and too soon, and it was too hard to write.
Right.
You know, it's been a little over a year now, and we could probably write it now. But at the time, it was like, oh, I'm going to divorce him. If we, you know, I mean, it was pretty bad, you know, because it brought back all those feelings. Why did you talk to the pharmacist? You know, why did you have to be nice? You know, and it was just,
so
you know.
So the moral of the story is you got to be a prick to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be. I don't like to be.
So
but no.
More New Yorkers were allowed to be a little, you know.
When I was like with my ex-wife is a comedian actor, and we were doing some writing together, even on stage. When we were married, it was fine. We would kind of, but once we were going through the separation, and like, I knew it was a little too painful for her, and I'm sure she was behind me, but she was doing her old jokes. So she, I was writing, I was going to therapy, because we were going to therapy together, so I would go to therapy and then talk about it on stage that night because it was fresh and I when we were married it was fine, but once we started, I guess she didn't want other people to know.
So instead of the therapist taking notes, you were taking notes.
I was taking notes.
All right, so this is good material. That's gonna
work.
Yeah, that'll work.
This is great.
Yeah, even if the therapist sits and I go, that's funny.
I'm gonna write that down. Oh, by the way, I'll send you the bill when I use this on stage.
That's fine. So you guys are Rome, New York. You're living out there. You're from Alaska. You're from Rome. And then you lived in Japan.
From Ohio. But we met
in
Alaska.
Yeah. That's where the internet date was?
Yeah. So basically what happened is I ordered a Russian bride. And she showed up.
And she
was masquerading as a Russian bride. And it worked out really well.
What is your nationality, Anna?
I am a hodgepodge. I'm a melting pot. So I am quarter German, quarter Hungarian, an eighth Polish and Slovak, and an eighth Irish and Native American.
So we have really good sausage in basically.
Oh, which he won't
eat.
You know,
no, that's not true. I'll eat it.
Sausage
I'm
and
not a
sauerkraut. He eats around it.
Which, well, you know, the best part of that, since you brought that up, is her maiden name is Grulich. And
the German, that's my
the
dad.
Stalker.
The German
listening.
No.
Grulich is the maiden name.
I don't think the stalker wants to hear this. Because historically, Grulich is a band of assassins.
No,
not assassins.
Executioners. We cut people's heads off. Thank you very much.
Nice.
So it means evil and all kinds of other bad things.
Grulich. So, as a little girl, did you want to write? Were you creative in school?
I was creative in school. My big thing was that I was really into comedy when I was growing up, you know. And my dad raised me on Monty Python and Mel Brooks, and especially Mel Brooks, you know. And Peter Sellers and, you know. So that's where that's my lens that I see the world, you know. Some people are like, oh, drama's really easy to write, comedy's hard, and it's like, comedy's easier for me, you know. We're writing this drama script, and it's harder for me because, you know, I don't know. So I always wanted to do, I always liked comedy. I was like laughing, you know, and I guess who doesn't? But I think it was making my dad laugh that really
weird.
It was more important than anything.
Watching comedy and crying.
But I think I wrote my first book when I was like in eighth grade or something like that. And it's, and it sucked.
Did it get published?
Oh no, I was in eighth grade. So you know, but
nowadays
I wanted to be the next Agatha Christie. I was going to write mystery novels, and then that never happened. So. No, I didn't always want to write.
It's
like,
funny you mentioned
like this.
But then you got pulled into chef, right?
I dropped out of college to become a chef. I got a job over the summer working just as a line cook, and I had done other stuff in kitchens and things like that beforehand. And by the end of the summer, they asked me if I wanted to be a sous chef, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I won't go back to college. And so I did that for a long time. And then I wound up moving to Alaska to do that and wound up staying in Alaska and got food allergies, so I had to shelve that as a career. And then a friend of mine said, hey, I'm writing an indie film and I trust you and I think you can do it. And so I love movies. Like, that was my thing. My dad and I always would sit and watch movies at night, and that kind of like, you know, fostered that in me. And that was my thing. He was really into music, but, you know, the comedies, the TV shows, things like that that he showed me. So I'm like, well, you know, I've watched hundreds and thousands of movies. I love movies. Why couldn't I write? And so I got every book I could, every thing I could do, and I really helped him write his indie, and that's how I got started. And then I went to UCLA. You know,
so you wrote it before you went to school.
Yeah, because it was one of those things, like, when I was writing it, and I'm like, I can do this. This was awesome. And at the time, I was living in a cabin in the middle of Alaska, and I needed something to help keep me sane. So, and that helped.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she's like your misery. She's your
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. So you guys, as we were talking about the other day, about, like, moving out here, is this new after the meeting? Is it a possibility of you guys moving out
absolutely.
Yeah, we had two really good meetings so far.
I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the great thing about being a writer is that you can write from anywhere. So you don't necessarily have to live in L.A. per se, but that's a double-edged sword also. A lot of people in the industry say, well, you necessarily don't have to live in L.A. to be a feature film writer.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize when it comes to television, you really do have to live in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do have to be there for the studios. You do have to be on the Warner Brothers lot. You know, if you're going to be on a writing team,
sure.
You have to be physically living in L.A. There's no doubt about that. But the wonderful thing about feature films is that you can write from anywhere, come to L.A. If you're lucky enough to have a manager, which, you know, we currently do, which is great, they help you with that. And at that point, but, you know, we got the pitching down, so that's, you know, if we lived, we know that if we lived here, we would just be taking a lot more meetings, and that's important to us.
Do you guys, you know, I know me and Tim gone into the meetings, the pitch meetings, but have you, do you guys practice it, like a play? That's how I do it.
Oh,
no.
No,
I do most of the pitching. When we first started out, I did most of the pitching, and then it was kind of great because, you know, I kind of taught her about pitching, and she taught me about writing, so it worked out good.
Oh, right.
But you know, for me, I was kind of spoiled being in the military because with that, you know, the great thing about the military is when you're a young airman, especially in the Air Force, and I worked the space program, you get to basically talk to, and not only that, be the speaker at a lot of meetings that colonels are at, generals are at, a lot of officers. So I was an enlisted guy. So I started out very young talking to high-level officers and high-level government officials who would come in and listen to our presentations that we had to give for our unit and stuff. So that taught me basically no fear at that point. And 21 years later, I could speak to anybody. So when I go in there and I pitch, it's no different than me going and pitching to a four-star general who has to make a multi-billion-dollar decision on a multi-billion-dollar satellite system. So that kind of really geared me up for the entertainment industry. And then, you know, a lot of people get really nervous.
I get really nervous. He cold called. He's like, oh yeah, I just cold called this person and that person. I'm like, are you shitting me?
Wow.
You know? And sometimes I'll hear him, like, you know, and he'll be like, oh, I'm gonna cold call this person. I'm like, I leave the room. I'm gonna go for a walk around the block.
Yeah.
You know, that is not my thing. It gives me anxiety just watching him do it.
The best story on that. I'll get back to Earth in here in just a sec, but the best story on that is. I decided that, you know, I was going to cold call someone, and I didn't tell her who at the time, and I said, I'm going to go ahead and pitch this. I had a sci-fi project that I felt was really good for this company. So I cold call, and what I meant to get was I actually meant to get somebody's, you know, they either have an intern that answers the phone, or they have, you know, whatever the secretary is for that main office of the development is at. Well, it wasn't the development exec's number. Apparently, I got the wrong number. Ended up being the VP of the company, not of development, the entire company. So I said, oh, imagine that. So I pitched it to her, or I left a message, and ended up pitching it to her. Then I was waiting on a call back.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there on the couch.
Yes, watching TV.
And our caller ID is connected to the television. So when you get a call in, it goes in big letters on a big, you know, 50-inch screen on the TV. And it says, VP Sony Pictures. Oh, and my wife just looks at me. She goes, what the fuck did you just do?
And I walked out of the
house.
And
she, like, all the color left her face. I think it was a trail of just sweat of nervousness.
Oh, my God. I cannot do it. But so I'm getting a lot better at the pitching, and we do a lot of Skype pitches, which are good. So it taught me more, and you know, I'm doing a lot better with it. It's not that I can't talk to people, but I just, I can never do what he does.
It's funny how it's sort of like you said, you have the training with the military, that it's actually like an art. Like, you know, I've heard the reference of, like, bodybuilders, where they spend the whole, all this time developing a great body, but if they can't pose during a competition.
Right. Yeah, you know, they come off as quirky and odd and everything.
Yeah.
Really, pitching is actually an art form. And it's just the art of communication. It's the ability to talk to anybody just like you're talking to your best friend.
I keep telling him he should charge people, show them how to pitch. He's so phenomenal. You know, we get that feedback all the time from people. Great pitch. The story's not for us, you know, but you guys were wonderful and whatever.
Yeah.
And they just, or, you know, they love the story and they get the read and they all say, great pitch, great pitch.
You know, it's so funny because there are... They have those jobs out here, kind of like you can do
right.
Like,
yeah, they're pitching coaches and stuff like that.
Well, there's a guy out here. There was an article in the magazine, like the Hollywood Reporter or something like that, where he guarantees he'll sell your show. Like, he literally guarantees he'll sell your show. He's like the pitch king. He goes in.
It's a pretty lofty guarantee.
Yeah, It's pretty. It was pretty insane. Yeah, you probably could Google it, but So you're gonna probably be out here. You got the kid lives with you normally.
She's on vacation for a couple weeks.
How old is she?
She's 13, but 13. She's starting high school.
Okay.
So she grade skipped.
So just was born into teenage angst. So that's starting.
So you're dealing with the teenage.
Drama should start more.
She doesn't want to be seen with
It's not that bad. She still, you know, is seen around us and everything. It's not that bad yet. But we went camping just this past, like, 4th of July. We went camping, and we found her reading her journal, thinking about her boyfriend, locked in the car and crying.
Oh, my God.
I told her, you got to put the back of your hand on your forehead, and then you got to weep slowly in the stars and say, my lost love.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, and so it begins.
So we're just starting that phase. It's very...
Now, it's both your child? No.
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 So it's my stepdaughter. You adopted her?
No, I haven't officially adopted her. Her dad's pretty still active in her life.
Okay.
So there was no need to adopt her.
As long as he's a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's in there, and her and I get along great. She's a great kid. And, she's just quirky like any quirky 13-year-old is.
Yeah.
And she has a boyfriend, and she's crying.
Yep.
So were you able to date at 13?
Was I able to? I started dating, probably about that time.
Maybe I was 22.
That's when he lost his virginity. 18 is the first time he fingered a girl. That was his grandma.
We apologize for all the grandmothers out there.
A secret on one podcast.
So, is there anything like, so you guys have your website, awesomemonkeyproductions.com?
We're in the middle, or actually in the midst of building the actual website for it. There's a Facebook page for it, and it's Awesome Monkey Productions. That was a production company that was started by Anna, actually, and then I got on board right after that. That was built basically to help build an LLC to help protect, you know, the scripts, you know, any filming that we're going to do at that time. And it's starting, believe it or not, to take off fairly quickly this past year.
So how many scripts do you guys have ready to go?
Ready to go? It's in the double digits. I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
I don't know how many.
And is that, that's mostly feature films?
Yes, we only have...
Mostly feature films. We have about three television pilots right now.
Three pilots.
For a television series.
And what about books? Have you thought of working on that?
We have, because we have a TV pilot that we really like. We really are trying to champion. And people keep saying, well, if you do the book and we could see the book, then we could... they'd be more inclined to do it as a TV series or as a feature or something like that. So I think people are, I don't know, something about it being sci-fi, it's just for some reason for us it's a hard sell. It's too close to this, it's too close to that, and it's like, it's not like any of those.
Yeah.
So, sci-fi is a hard realm because there's so much of it out there, so much that has been done over the years, but we took a project and that's exactly what we did with it. We didn't want to make it like any other sci-fi out there. And we wanted to change the core story of that, which actually has gotten some interest in the past couple of pitches that we've done.
Right, and we've had actors attached.
Tom Proctor from Guardians of the Galaxy, he's actually attached. He loved the project. He read it and said, I will be there the day it's made, and I will beg the casting director to cast me in it. He goes, because it's a great story. And that's coming from him, so he's a really good guy.
Yeah, he's always working. He's great.
Yeah, he's always working, so.
It's funny, because I just read an article about how quick times can change. Like, I don't know if you remember the movie Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Night Shyamalan, whatever.
Right.
Night Shyamalan. So they were talking about how it's really a comic book movie.
Right.
But they didn't advertise it, because back then comic book movies
weren't really doing...
So right. Now, yeah. 15 years later, it's got a cult following. They said it would have been different had he done it now.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think it would have been a lot more successful.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Because he actually had three. It was going to be the first.
Yep.
And then because it didn't do as well as they thought, they kind of shelved it. He got deterred and didn't go back to do the other two.
Yeah.
So have you guys ever written a scene? This is a... I know a famous writer, director, and he writes scenes for his movies that he's never going to shoot. He writes them for the pitch. And they're like, oh my God, it's amazing, blah, blah, blah. And then every time when he directs, you know, like the actors will see that it's in the scene and they might like learn their lines. And they'll go, oh, hey, I can't learn this monologue. It's really hard. He's like, ah, we're not going to do that. Like... He does it in every movie.
That may work for the director.
Yeah, that's how he pitches. That's how he started pitching and selling shows. And then, he's hugely famous. I'll tell you off air who he is.
But, yeah, I mean, we've never done that ourselves. We always write to what's going to be put on the screen. We've run into, and this is just our personal experience and, you know, not... knocking this director by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Just what we personally run up against is that a lot of the execs that we've talked to, they want to make sure that what we pitch is what's in what they're going to read,
mm-hmm.
and what's actually envisioned to be in that film and or TV show. They don't like to read things personally that aren't going to be in there. So they don't basically want me to pitch something, and if I come up with this grand pitch. And then they read it and go, well, it's nothing like what you pitched. They say, no thanks.
Right.
Because we already put them in a frame of mind what to expect. And I'm afraid that if I ended up doing it that way, it would probably get more negative.
No, I'm just.
But that's interesting, though. I've never heard of that being successful.
Yeah.
So,
it's very, very successful.
But you know what? You
got to find what works for
you.
You
got to find what works for you.
And you got to do that.
And in the realm of writing and pitching, there is, I love it because all of our friends ask us all the time, you know, what's the secret? How are you guys getting so much success out of this? What are you guys doing? You know, what's the secret? And I look at them all the time and say, there is no secret. Mm-hmm. I said, if you come to Hollywood and come to L.A., you will find out there is no such thing as this secret playbook that you must follow every single mm-hmm. rule, and it's going to be a mm-hmm. guarantee to get you into it. That shit doesn't exist.
I think the only thing you need is a great script. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people that I know, that we both know, who, you know, work really hard to pitch their ideas, and they pitch really well, and they get their idea up the chain, and it lands on the right desk, and their script sucks. Right. You know, that's not going to open any doors for you. That's going to get you black marks against
closed,
you.
Yeah,
yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you have the right script and the right people and the right motivation, you know, yeah, maybe it won't happen with company A, but, you know, it might happen with company B or C or D or Q. You mm-hmm. know, you have to be persistent. You have to find the right place to put that script.
What makes you guys think that you are as good as your confident level is?
The feedback we've received. It's not, you know.
I have no ego.
It's
not about like, oh, we're just so wonderful or anything
not
like that.
All.
Because
not at all.
You have to get to the point where it's about the art mm-hmm. and making the art as good as it can be. So it's not that we are great. We know our projects are great. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that we're willing to put forth the effort to make a great project. And we had an argument about, a creative discussion this morning over breakfast. And he, you know, and we were talking about a script, and I said, you know, the thing about the script that nobody wants to make because it's too sci-fi, you know, it has won competitions. Everybody who reads it wants to attach. It's one of those things that everyone is telling us it is good. And every feedback that we have gotten from a production company has been, we know this script is good. It's just not for us. It's too risky. The world is too big, but your writing is good. Your script is good. And so it's not that we're great. We just put so much into our script.
Well, you know, it's the best feedback we've ever gotten to have such success is point blank, this exact look at us and just said, you know, why, you know, we like working with you guys is because you're not dicks.
Right.
And
sure.
that simple statement was huge, because if you just be yourself, I mean, people want to work with other people in this industry that are fun to work with. You know, like,
yeah.
we know you. If we thought you were a dick, I wouldn't be here doing a podcast.
Right,
right,
I mean, right,
right.
Of course.
I mean, I kind of still think you are. But, you
know. I get paid to be a dick.
There you go. That's different.
Do you ever find that there's certain scripts where you can't finish? You're like, oh, there's something I gotta, or do you continuously look at old scripts and go, hey, maybe it's worked out?
There, I'll give you a great example of one that I'm working on now, which is a thriller called Ethereal. And it's a script that I started, and I had the first maybe 13 pages of. But I stopped because it wasn't coming to me no longer. And if I push myself, I'll push myself to madness and crazy. Is it worth it? So I haven't touched it in like 3 months. Is that necessarily a bad thing? In my eyes, no, because I keep thinking about it, and eventually it's going to click and go, that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for a that's it moment, you know, and then I'll have Anna take a look at it. And then she'll
so that's kind of how you deal with maybe a little like writer's block, kind of put it to the side, and you'll come right back. Yeah.
Right, yeah. We'll work on
still in the
else.
Writer's mode. You're not like doing
but you're
things.
Not killing yourself
yeah.
over it. You
right.
know, there's plenty of stuff to write.
You can't force it.
No, yeah.
Yeah, we have a list on our whiteboard at home over in the corner of 7 different projects that we have
to
work
on.
I can show you pictures on my phone.
We got a whiteboard.
That's hilarious, because I just I was at Steve's,
in this day and age. Right?
I was at Comedians yesterday, him and his wife, and they have a whiteboard because she's like a well-known designer for purses.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there looking at the whiteboard, and me and Tim actually got to write on it the other day. It's so funny that you're saying whiteboard. It's like, it makes me laugh every time I say it. That's
yeah.
why I had a
yeah,
picture.
It's
great. And I want people to pursue their dreams.
Right.
But what if, like, you just, I don't know, you're pitching, everything's great now. You're pitching, and this is great, and this is this. And then all of a sudden, you don't, I don't know, you're just not writing. There's something missing that, like, right now, it's all connecting. And all of a sudden, it's just not connecting anymore. do you say, I don't want to write again? Do you want to go learn more maybe that you're missing? You know how like they have script doctors that are like, you're missing something.
Right.
Well, we haven't had a chance experiencing that quite yet. But.
Well, that's not true. I mean, because there are times when, you know, yes, everything is clicking for us right now. And it has been clicking for us, you know, over the past couple mm-hmm. months. But there have been times when it's like, well, we've done 10 pitches and we got 10 requests and everybody said it's good writing, but it's not for us.
Oh, I don't consider that a failure.
But no, but it does, when you get to that point, you know, yeah, your bubble's popped a little bit. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, he's never had that low moment when I've had my low moment. You know, when I go, gosh, I just can't do this anymore. He brings me up and
right.
says, yes, you can. You can do this. Look at what we've done. Look at our successes. And, you know, and he'll lift me up. And when he's like, fuck this, I can't do this anymore, I'm there for him.
Right.
So I think we do have those moments of self-doubt, but that's what...
There's no doubt that this industry only relies on one thing. And it doesn't matter, a writer, a comedian, actor, a musician, relies only on one thing in the entertainment industry, and that's persistence.
Right.
And if you give up, the industry does not give a shit if you mm-hmm. give up or not. They don't
yeah,
care. Nobody cares.
Fill you
with because there's a billion people doing this job. Mm-hmm. So that's why you got to keep pushing. You got to be persistent. And look, we've been lucky enough to have that drive and continue to do it.
Right.
So you guys, of course, you compliment each other. And she helps you when you're sad, and vice versa. but what all of a sudden, and I know what it's like because my stupid idiot writing partner had went and did some other projects without me.
Mm-hmm.
So like when he went to do this project with this guy Tom, right? So does it hurt your feelings a little bit?
If he does a project without me?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit, but
right.
you know, I got over it.
Right.
You know?
No, I think you guys are a great writing team. I mean, I've already been reading the scripts and stuff, and I think the writing teams, in my eyes, are the best. I think that the lone fucking mental case that just writes alone is. You know what I mean? Like, look, I'm not saying they're not going to write something great, but I think that they don't, you know, I remember going to these, I hated this. I hated to him go, hey, we're going to put your Entourage spec for everyone to look at it and rip it apart. And I'm like, why? Why are you going to let everybody
right.
rip apart our fucking spec that we worked so damn hard on it? He's like, well, that's how it's done. I go, no, it doesn't have to be done that way.
Right.
Why can't some people read it? Why do we have to have some fucking losers that aren't doing anything other
right.
than are in some writer's workshop ripping apart our thing?
Those are
right.
those aren't the people you want reading.
Exactly.
Yes.
But that's why we talked about success and failure of, like, the black cloud. You know, like, you know, you can believe in God. Of course, I believe in God. But people, some people, whoever, higher being, whatever, the world is not going to let that person, you know, like, I try, like, to go against the grain. I'm like, fuck that. Not everyone, I don't need to put my thing to, like, a script doctor. Like, let's say your film goes to, or let's say, not even your film, so, like, you can get your, like, script, like, your William Morris or whoever it is, right? And they take you to Sundance, and then they're like, you know, your script is floating around up there, and someone's like, oh, we really like this, or let's have the script doctor come in, and it's like, well, fuck you, script doctor. Like, I don't like the script doctors. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Well, we actually have one guy.
He's a reader.
We actually have one guy who actually we send all of our material to before we pump out our final draft. And he's a professional reader, and he's read for the big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
He's read for Fox. He's read for ABC. He's read for all kinds of studios. And he's a great guy. And he provides invaluable feedback. I mean, it's wonderful feedback.
No, that's fine.
And
that's what we do. We don't pay for coverage. We don't pay for to, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people are paying for coverage.
Ridiculous prices, too, like $500, $700. If you're paying $500, $700 for a script coverage, they're ripping you off.
Yeah, our guy does it for $60. You know, send us an email. We'll let you know.
It's
Adam Sandler has a guy who every script he approves, and then he pays this guy a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
He approves every, as soon as it's done, it's final. This guy comes in and he fucking reads everything and he approves. And like, I don't think that there's a credit. I don't think he just pays him a ton of money and the guy doesn't get a credit or anything for it.
I mean, you know what happens in on the studio level is that when you bring your script to that executive and they take that script, the very first thing they do is they give it to their staff to do just that, to do a read-through and rip it apart, what's called coverage on it. If you're lucky enough to ever receive that coverage, which is 99.9% of the time, you will never see it. But if you're lucky enough, you'll see what kind of coverage it is. I mean, so coverage is important. Even on a writing level, it's very important. It's how you get that coverage is the key.
Right.
So it does put another set of eyes. And if it's a, now let me say this, this is the key. If it's a professional reader, someone who knows what they're doing, they can be the key to a successful script. They really can, because they'll catch stuff you never even saw, or you never saw the disconnect in something that they'll actually catch for you.
The trick is finding somebody who is better than you.
Yes.
You know, not just, oh, everybody that you know and your BFF and your mom and whatever. The trick is finding somebody who can help you improve.
Right.
Not somebody who's going to tell you, or somebody who's at the same level where you are and they're going to rip it apart, you know. I posted one of my scripts online, and I think I told you this the other day, but I posted one of my scripts online, and I asked what people thought, because my manager wasn't all that happy about it, but the script reader absolutely loved it, and so I wanted to get unbiased opinions. And it was one of those things, since I mentioned I had a manager, and I had this and that, they're like, who the hell are you? And I got ripped on because I was a woman, and it was not about the script. It was all personal attacks on me, and it was just insane the things that people...
Insane.
Yeah.
Here's a story I'll tell you about Tim. So we're comedians, we're in New York, and there used to be this thing called the Usenet, where you could post things. I mean, this is before Facebook or MySpace, anything. And you could, like, ask questions. So Tim writes, he goes, yeah, he knows what I'm saying. And I've never told this story before. So Tim posts, and I remember reading it, but I didn't post. I was a lurker. I never liked to post.
Right,
I didn't want to deal with these idiots. Then I'd want to fight these guys, right? And Tim posts, hey, you know, Eddie Murphy was supposed to come out with another comedy special over 10 years ago, and he never did. What do you guys think of that? And Tim had wrote it in all caps.
Oh.
He had about 100 comments. Why would you write in fucking caps? What are you, a loser? Who writes in caps? Now, one person answered
the question.
Right.
So I said, what fucking assholes these guys. I couldn't believe now
there
one
will always be an internet
person.
Troll.
always
be an internet troll.
Yeah.
You can count on it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you put.
So that's like your thing. You know, it social network, so you guys are good. You know, I see you guys tweeting and this and that. Do you think you could be better at it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it is a social network world. But at the same time, she's better at it than I am. I'm not a big Twitter fan, per se. That's just me. I'm not used to tweeting everything that I do every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I used to tweet a lot more than I did, and then I got a... You know, some people just have to go out of their way to ruin the internet for other people.
Right.
You know, and so I got stopped because of a blog, so I took that down. And I started another blog, and I got stopped on that blog, so I took that down. I used to tweet almost everything, and then that started causing problems. And then I found a friend on Twitter, and we were having a great time, and I thought she was my BFF girlfriend, who lived out in LA, and I was encouraging her with her writing, and she turned out to be this 40-year-old guy who works at Home Depot in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I was just, it's like, so you just can't trust
So
people.
What
so
we do now,
I have cut back drastically on.
So what we do now is just basically Facebook and tweet
Yeah, it's crazy.
So now we just concentrate on the business itself. We just tweet about the business itself, tweet about, you know,
kind of
our adventures through the entertainment industry as we're starting to come up. Because it is an adventure. And we do want to share it with people just to tell them that it is possible to get through all these weird ropes, chains, and barbed wire fences. You just got to kind of navigate your way through.
Have you guys ever did anything like this, a podcast or radio thing?
No.
This is the first podcast.
Like, she seems a little nervous. She drank about 15 waters.
Closing
her eyes.
Well, right now she probably has to pee real bad.
Yeah.
So that's
well, after 15 waters, you do. So good. Well, I'm going to wrap this up with a couple things. I'd like to ask you guys, is there anything you want to plug? Is there a website? Like, I think I went to a website for the production.
Yeah, so Awesome Monkey Productions is on Facebook right now. We're going to build a website from that, but we'll announce the website once that's up. We have one of Anna's first screenplays, or her second screenplay that she did out of UCLA, is a romantic comedy called Pink Slips. It just got picked up by a director out of New York City, Claude Buchinger, and he's already had actors attached. It's already on IMDb, and the project is just taking off. We're really excited about it, so we're working hard on that. So we have executive producers attached to it as well, and it's moving forward. So we wanted to definitely plug that. So that's going to be on an independent level with distribution, and we also. One of the biggest things we have coming that we decided to put together is Rome, New York's first independent film festival.
Okay.
And the Rome, New York Film Festival is also on Facebook as well, and that's a competition short indie type of film festival. But what makes it so unique about that is that not only is it for adults, we actually have youth category, which is not often seen in independent film festival. We're offering $1,000 scholarships to the winner for both a screenplay competition and the actual film.
The little girls out of Alaska.
That's right. So we're kind of all over the place right now, but that's how we like it. It's keeping us busy.
So how can they follow you on Twitter?
I am Anna Literally at on Twitter, and Mark is Mark Literally.
Literally, that is the tweet. Excellent. So it's there's a couple things I've never had two people on here before, and I'm gonna have to answer this question because I think it'll be funny.
After the last podcast, realized what the question might be.
Yeah. So, who is your man crush?
Who is my man crush?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a question.
No, sure.
Oh, it's my question.
Yeah.
I'd have to say, who would it be? If I had to pick somebody, it would be the guy I showed you the other movie I was who did Blade. What was on Blade 3? What is his name? Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds
is awesome. He would have to be my man crush.
Have you ever seen him buried?
No, I have not.
Just him in a casket with a cell phone. It's great.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
The whole movie.
That's
like
awesome.
It's great. It's a great movie. Who's your woman crush?
My woman crush? It's J-Lo.
J-Lo?
Yeah.
Wait, I just like to announce officially that I'm okay with that.
I had an almost sex dream about J-Lo, and she was coming out of me in my dream. She was coming out of me really bad, and I told her that I couldn't do anything with her until I got approval from my husband.
Oh, I would not argue this whatsoever. As a matter of fact, there might be video.
So
I was not disappointed when she told me about this whatsoever.
So what is the sexiness to J Lo? That
I have no idea.
Not a fat ass. Her hair.
She has that Latino charm. That's just damn sexy.
Okay, you don't have a crush on.
So what?
No,
what is So if you were a porn star, Anna, what would your porn star name be?
Oh my God, I have no idea.
Tits McGee.
Tits McGee.
That'll be yours. Okay.
Oh, so my dad can't listen to this.
No. We're okay. Going to either can our children.
That's, oh,
it's
my
over
God.
At this point. Welcome to LA.
Gosh, I have no idea.
I'd say cinnamon.
Cinnamon? You think cinnamon?
Yeah.
Didn't the last guy say he was
going to
be cinnamon?
But
cinnamon
stick? That's what he said.
Cinnamon stick. Yeah, but they both have red hair, so it's a red hair thing.
Okay, cinnamon? So cinnamon. Well, he you're supposed to come up with it, not this.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. He's the creative guy. He comes up with it.
So how would you pitch cinnamon to a porn star director?
How would I pitch cinnamon to a
yeah.
porn star director?
Yeah, you guys got to move out here and you got to do porn. Writing things not working out. How would you pitch her?
Oh, man, I would totally pimp her out. I'd be like, look, you haven't seen cinnamon sticks until you've seen this cinnamon stick. Let me tell you, she's spicy from the top right to the bottom.
Nice. There we go.
You like that? I'm seeing there
getting,
you go.
Tim's getting
there
a little turned on. Listen, he just kicked me three times. It wasn't his foot. Yeah. So, what would your porn star name be?
My porn star name, Anaconda.
Anaconda.
You notice how she immediately agreed with that? I don't know why.
Yeah, I know
we have
why.
Not discussed this at all in the past. I'd like to point that out. Maybe we did on a camping trip and it was.
I don't know why.
Was involved.
Why is it Anaconda, Anna? Let her talk. Let her talk. I need to know this.
You just snorted.
You just snorted. You're listening. She's snorted on live radio.
Because he's absolutely huge.
Wow.
What is huge?
That's
like huge
wow.
for a white guy or huge for a black guy?
Huge.
All right, so you're huge. So maybe your kid will listen.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to that. To any director or producer who's listening right now, I do not do porn, okay? Unless there's a large amount of money involved.
Yeah. Emphasis on
the
large
amount
of money.
So, one last thing. What would your favorite swear word be, Mark?
Oh, that's easy. I'm from New York. It's fuck.
Fuck.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, because anything fucking pisses me off, I fuck that.
Fuck this. We're going to end on Anna. What would your favorite swear word be?
I say fuck a lot.
That's why you guys are together.
Yeah.
Marriage made in fucking heaven. That's enough for Brooklyn Buddha Podcast. Tim, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Anna, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Mark, kill yourself.
I'm fucking out of here.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here. Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.